Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 28th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, author Brian Sorensen joins me on the porch to talk about his new book, Arkansas Beer, An Intoxicating History. It's a fascinating look at the evolution of my home state's brewing industry and a profile of where we are now. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Basic Brewing, and find our show page on Facebook as well. Thanks to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first, and click on our associate link on basicbrewing.com on the right-hand side of the page. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, that'll help us find new listeners or new listeners find us. And if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already as well. I posted a video episode this past Friday. In it, I brewed what I'm calling a hop stand cascade pale ale. I chilled the wort of the pale ale after the boil to 175 degrees Fahrenheit or 80 C. And I maintained it there for 15 minutes while I added 2 ounces of Cascade pellets. It's a technique that I'm planning to use again because I think it made for a more juicy beer than I'm used to brewing. The bad news is that since it was so tasty, it's gone. Steve also posted a video on his YouTube channel for Steve's Brew Shop, where he is starting a sizer, so we'll keep you updated on that one. And you know, when the sizer goes to the next step, we'll shoot video of that happening and such as that. So subscribe to Steve's channel as well. I kegged my 15-minute extract saison, and it is also very tasty. I posted a picture of the ingredients a couple weeks ago on social media, and a lot of people liked that. Were interested in that. Really easy to brew, just a 15-minute boil with a liquid extract and some Belgian candy syrup. The Imperial B56 rustic yeast strain really added a lot of fun Belgian yeast character to the beer. So I can't wait to share it with Steve. I've got another beer in the primary fermenter. I'm calling it my take on an American Pilsner. German Pilsner malt, flaked maize, Czech Saaz hops, and a lager yeast. Although I'm trying to experiment with the fermentation temperature, it's not really a lager. I chilled the wort down to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, or 10 C, pitched the yeast, and then set that into my 70 degree Fahrenheit, or 21 C basement to rise in temperature naturally. So I don't know if it made a difference in the fermentation character of the beer or not, but I'm looking forward to tasting that. On Monday, my wife Susan and I went to Tulsa to put our son on a plane to go back to college up in Washington, and we took the opportunity to visit our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity. Desiree actually wasn't there, but Dave and his daughter Amanda and her husband Tim treated us to some samples at their tap room, Pippin's Tap Room. They're brewing 4% beers right now, but Desiree posted yesterday that they do have the paperwork to start producing higher alcohol beers, so I'm sure they're excited about that. I'm not sure when that can happen. Don't know if there are any more hurdles to pass, but congratulations to them for getting past that mark. I did an interview for next week's show on the sampling that we did and got some advice from Amanda, Tim, and Dave on brewing session beers. I do want to talk about my electric brewing system that I got from High Gravity. When I chilled the wort briefly to do my hop stand for the pale ale I talked about earlier, I overshot my target. I was shooting for 180 degrees, and I wound up at 175, so not that big of a deal. But viewer Thomas commented on the YouTube channel that I could have used the Warthog electric brewery controller to hit that temperature exactly. And of course, I could have if I had thought of it. The Warthog EBC-130 controller has a mash mode and a boil mode. And after the boil, I could have switched back to mash mode, set my target hop stand temperature so that if I overshot it by cooling too much, the controller could have kicked in to stabilize it while I ran to turn off the cooling water. Now, that's the kind of precise control and flexibility electric brewing brings to the table, and I love it. Electric brewing takes the pain out of propane. Check out all the electric brewery systems and controllers at our friends, family-owned and operated, highgravitybrew.com. That's highgravitybrew.com. And if you buy an electric system on their site, be sure to use the code EBC75BB to get $75 off of your system. Now, even if you don't live in Arkansas, today's interview is a fun one. Brian Sorensen's book, Arkansas Beer, An Intoxicating History, not only follows the history of brewing in my home state, which is deeper than I realized, but it also profiles every brewery, past and present. And I'm going to be using it frequently as a resource. I invited Brian to come sit on the porch, share a couple of beers, and chat. Brian Sorensen, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me, James. It's a real honor to be here on your patio with you.
You bet. You've interviewed me and Steve and Andy for an article about our podcast and such for the Fayetteville Flyer, online newspaper, as it were. And so now it's time for me to turn the tables.
Well, it seems a little odd to be on this side of the table, but again, a real honor to be here.
Well, thanks. You've written a book called Arkansas Beer, and I want to get into it, but we've got some beers in front of us to sample along the way. So it's not just going to be about Arkansas brewing history, although there's going to be a lot of that. So selfishly, the first beer that I gave you was one of my home brews, and this is what I'm calling a hop stand pale ale with Cascade hops and a Magnum for bittering. And it's just a standard pale ale with 10 pounds of two-row, half a pound to 60 level Bond Crystal. And then the thing that I think makes it interesting is that instead of adding 2 ounces of Cascade at the end of the boil, I chill down to 165 degrees and let it sit there for 15 minutes. And added those 2 ounces of Cascade at that point just to kind of get more kind of fruit in there. So what do you think? No pressure.
Well, James, it's a really nice beer. We're sitting here on a Sunday, and I could certainly envision myself drinking several of these watching NFL football. But a really nice, clean, pale ale, touch of sweetness, and like I said, very nice, very pleasurable to drink. Good job, James.
Well, thank you, sir. We got our homebrew info in there, and then I've got a six-pack of some interesting stuff that we may delve into a little bit later. And you brought a couple of commercial beers, local commercial beers as well. So talk about, you have been doing articles in documenting a lot of the local brewing scene here, especially in Northwest Arkansas, through FayettevilleFlyer.com. That's Fayetteville, FLYER.com. So you have kind of been writing history as a journalist, as journalists do, in real time. So what made you want to kind of step back and get the whole picture of Arkansas brewing history from the beginning until now?
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to look at the brewing industry, and as you said, more so here in Northwest Arkansas than the rest of the state. And the Fayetteville Flyer, a business run by Todd Gill and Dustin Bartholomew, gave me an opportunity a few years ago to write some beer reviews that evolved into brewer profiles and ultimately to some commentary around the industry. And fortunately, or perhaps serendipitously, Arcadia Publishing, the History Press, had a series devoted to brewing in local communities. They discovered the Fayetteville Flyer online. They needed someone to write about Arkansas, and they reached out. And I affectionately call this gig my side hustle. So, James, I do have a day job, and it took a little while to decide on whether I was up to the task, because expanding the scope from Northwest Arkansas to the rest of the state was quite a task. There's a lot going on, and To move from one corner of the state to the other is quite a bit of distance and a whole lot of interviews, but ultimately I decided to do so because A, I'm a huge fan of beer, and B, I'm a huge fan of our state. I'm an Arkansan to the bone, and since no one had set out to accomplish this, I thought, hey, might as well be me.
So have you been in the state your whole life? And I think you and I both have Hot Springs ties.
We do. I grew up in Springdale, Arkansas, here in the northwest part of the state. My wife is from Hot Springs, so the two of you share a hometown. Yeah, I've been here my whole life. A great interest in the history of our state, really Southern culture in general. And so I've studied a lot of our history going back to the state's inception to some of the important events. I particularly have an interest in race relations, believe it or not, and certainly there's a lot to pay attention to as relates to that in Arkansas. I mentioned in the book that the Little Rock school crisis took place in Little Rock, there's just a whole lot to pay attention to. And, you know, on a happier note, there's a lot of great things in our state to pay attention to as well. I have a lot of business within our borders, from Walmart stores to Tyson Foods to Dillard's, to Altel, Axiom, you name it, as well as just a host of geographical wonders. It's just a beautiful place to live, James.
You bet. JB Hunt Trucking is another name that people will see on the road. Our history is diverse and interesting from many points. But the brewing history, I was amazed at. You sent me some early drafts way back in the day. I wrote the foreword, by the way, and thank you for the honor and the privilege of doing that. But I was amazed at how deep Arkansas brewing roots go, and they kind of mirror the evolution of brewing in the United States. So where did brewing start in the state, and who started it?
Well, I should say, first of all, I appreciate you writing the foreword because it did, in a sense, legitimize my side hustle. But to answer,
and in a way, it kind of legitimized this for, you know, my, if I can tell people, hey, look, I've written a foreword in a book. It's a real thing I'm doing here.
Sure. a true win-win if there was one. But to answer your question, I think the beginning of brewing, as you said, mirrors a lot of the rest of the country in that German immigrants played the major role in bringing the industry to life. Records were sparse, certainly hard to obtain, but all indication is that brewing really started in the city of Little Rock around 1840. The George brothers, part of the larger George family, they themselves were German immigrants, and they did what they knew how to do best, which was brew beer and bring it to the public. And they had a beer garden in downtown Little Rock, just about in the current location of the Axiom building. So for folks who might be familiar with our capital city would know where that's at. I have to give credit to Ian Beard and some other folks from Stone's Throw Brewing. They have a penchant for historical research, and they have actually discovered the George brothers and brought it to my attention. But there are only a few examples in the state during the 1800s, but we can point to Germany as really, deserving the credit for brewing in Arkansas.
Yeah, and I talked to somebody the other day, a published author, who said about Adolphus Busch, you know, in the early days, what are now these, you know, megaliths of brewing started off as craft breweries, essentially. These are people that were making recipes up from scratch. They were innovating with the different ingredients, and they were really coming, you know, making this industry up from scratch, kind of like craft brewing is today. So in a way that there's kind of a mirroring going on. Now, and speaking of Adolphus Busch, there was some interest in one of the early Arkansas breweries from St. Louis, right?
That's right. Little Rock Brewing and Ice Company, also located in downtown Little Rock. And again, for those familiar with the city, it would be near the present-day home of the Bill Clinton Presidential Library. Little Rock Brewing and Ice Company was a major brewer, and 2 years after it came to life, and in I should say in 1900, Adolphus Busch and William Limp of the Limp Brewing family decided to invest and became major shareholders. And you know, it created, from what I could tell, a little bit of anxiety for folks in Little Rock because it was their brewery. And at the time, and I guess deservedly so, folks in Arkansas were a little bit wary of Northern money. But they did.
The timing
was a little bit strange, but nevertheless, it did infuse capital into the business and allowed them to expand. And surely they would have found great success and could possibly still be in existence today if it were not for Prohibition.
So here we had a what was a thriving brewery up until that point in Little Rock, right? Before there was the interest of the investment. And, you know, the interests in St. Louis took a look at this little brewery and said, hey, you know, let's invest in this. And here comes Jesse the dog. So it won't be it's not a Basic Brewing podcast without a canine of some sort. But so again, it's mirroring today where, you know, the big brewer, they weren't as big back then, was investing in a small craft brewery. And as you said, if it weren't for the crash of Prohibition that shut everybody down, who knows where that Arkansas brewery would be today?
That's right. And you make an interesting observation in that what happened then is in some sense going on now, and it's created quite a bit of controversy with craft drinkers today in the sense that these small upstart breweries are being gobbled up by the larger brewers in the country, and, well, I should say the larger brewers in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole lot of consolidation going around. And maybe this isn't the show to go into that into great detail on that.
We could spend all day and plus more talking about that.
Yeah, we could bring in a whole cast of characters on that one. So maybe Prohibition is the time to switch gears on our beers here that we're sampling. Not the least of it is that I'm at the bottom of my glass, so selfishly. Mm-hmm. I'll pour us a little rinse water here, and should we do the who should we do next? Should we do one of the commercial beers?
Sure. Let's try some Lost 40 Trash Panda. It's a beer that has received a lot of interest in the state over the last few weeks. Lost 40 Brewing Company is perhaps the largest brewer in the state of Arkansas currently. They are putting out last year it was at 10,000 barrels. They're expecting 15,000 here for 2017. They recently added two 240-barrel fermenters, and they are just pumping out a tremendous amount of beer. And I should say also, they're putting out wonderful beers, and I expect a good one here with this Northeastern IPA.
Yeah, I've had some beers from Lost 40, and I'm impressed, and they actually distribute to the little liquor store right down the street from me, so that's a good thing. And they package in cans. And I made the prediction the other day on Twitter that within 20 years, all craft beers will be in cans, and cans will replace the 12-ounce bottles. And I got stirred up a little controversy with that, but it'd be interesting to see how close that is.
The can is a terrific vessel for beer, and I know much has been written about it, and it's a little bit old and boring to talk about anymore, but as far as keeping oxygen and light out of the beer, preserving its freshness for a much longer period of time, and when you live in a state like Arkansas where we treasure the outdoors as much as we do, having a portable vessel like this to take on the lakes and rivers, it's just awesome.
It's darn hard to shatter a can and have it litter the bottom of a stream or a lake or whatever. Man, that is tasty. It is cloudy. So do you think that this is a salute to the New England IPA?
You know, it's the present-day black IPA, right? the Cascadian Dark Ale, maybe we should call that. Right, right. But anyways, yeah, the Northeastern IPA, the cloudy IPA, the juicy, fruity flavor and aroma. It's really a wonderful beer, and you know, I think it takes people a little bit of time to get past this cloudiness because it used to be thought of as a defect, but it's a terrific beer. Lost 40 did a wonderful job.
Well, and it'd be interesting to poll people to see how many people actually do think it's a defect. I know Chris Colby is not in the cloudy IPA camp yet. Yeah, it certainly is cloudy. But it is, and instead of being like juicy like a, you know, tropical fruit kind of a beer, to me it is grassy. It's way on more on the piney kind of grassy side of things, which I'm enjoying. I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's definitely much different than any IPA in the market right now here in Northwest Arkansas. And as I told you off camera, off radio, off mic, I guess, you know, they did this in a limited run, so it's hard to get. And fortunately, I have an in with the local beer guy at one of our retailers, and he had some stashed away in the back. So cheers to Steve at Liquor World, I suppose.
Yeah, cheers to Steve, and cheers to you for sharing. And they do have the Brewers Association Independent Craft Upside Down Beer Bottle label on there, which is yet another boy. So many things are contentious nowadays in the beer world and controversial.
Yeah, why is it upside down? Why is it not a can? A whole number of questions from people out there in the Twitterverse.
and then the AB InBev, they released that video with all the formerly independent brewers, kind of slamming the label there as if they were being a bit defensive in some way. So. Very interesting. Does Fossil Cove have it on theirs yet?
I haven't seen it. I think I've seen the sticker on their door, but not yet on their packaging.
Okay, well, yeah. So boy, that's a tasty beer. So Prohibition, as happens across the country, Prohibition shuts down brewing in Arkansas. And has a major impact not only on the production of alcohol, but obviously the consumption of alcohol as well. And we're still feeling that effect today in that I believe, not last time I checked, about half of our 75 counties in the state are dry. Mm-hmm. In those dry counties, there's a patchwork of legislation governing if you can have a beer, if you have a restaurant that is considered a quote-unquote private club, you can have alcoholic beverages. It's just a mess. So how long does it take until Arkansas gets back into the beer production business?
Well, it takes decades. In fact, it took nearly 70 years before beer came back into production in our state. As you said, the state continues to be a patchwork of laws and restrictions and prohibitions, if you will. Being here in the South, we're definitely in the Bible Belt. The temperance movement found a strong foothold here in Arkansas. In fact, Carrie Nation, who was a leader of the temperance movement, actually made Eureka Springs, Arkansas, her home for a period of time. So it was certainly alive and well here. And, you know, I think people in Arkansas just, they just forgot what good beer was about. As beer production ramped back up, the industrial lagers took hold, and fizzy yellow pilsners and things of that nature dominated the market, and it was more about volume, and it was more about price point, and it was seen more as a commodity than something to treasure, I guess is how I would call it.
And let's not joke around, it's still that way for the vast majority of beer drinkers in the state. You know, you walk into a package store, you walk into a liquor store or a grocery store or whatever, still the dominant beer is the fizzy yellow stuff. But these local beers are making headway. So who was the first to kind of, you know, tip their toe back into the brewing waters in Arkansas?
Interestingly enough, the former mayor of Fordyce, Arkansas, William Lyon, who billed himself as the redneck entrepreneur. He had interest in many different types of businesses, but he encountered a gentleman named Scott Riley in the early 80s who was attempting to start a microbrewery restaurant. Unfortunately, at the time, laws in Arkansas did not allow for that, so it failed. But it made the news rounds, and Mr. Lyon, it piqued his interest, and he joined up with Riley, and they formed Arkansas Brewing Company. It was located down on Cantrell Road in Little Rock, Arkansas, and only in existence for a couple of years. I mean, really, we can point to that team as being the grandfathers, if you will, of the current brewing industry in the state. It really blazed some trails, and some beers that you might recognize from that era, 10 Point beer. Let's see.
Reference to deer hunting, maybe?
Absolutely. Whitetail, another reference. And, you know, we still see online people who have collected some of those bottles and treasure them, quite frankly. In fact, I ran across somebody who has an unopened version of the bottle, and we decided together that we wouldn't unsettle that beer. Probably didn't last the test of time.
Well, I have a 4-pack of I believe it was made by them of the sesquicentennial beer, celebrating the 150th birthday of the state, and it's upstairs. They encased it in shrink wrap plastic. Mm-hmm. And put a little bow on the top of it, and I still have it upstairs. And you're right, it's not worth opening.
How many were in the collection? Was it a 4-pack?
It was a 4-pack.
Okay, so as the story goes, they got in trouble with the state of Arkansas for packaging the beer in fours, because the laws did not allow for that at the time, and so they actually took a loss. They had to go basically dump all of the beer that they had placed in the market, and took a huge loss. So it was a part of their demise.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so I have a little bit of history up there.
That's right.
and that and, you know, $5 will get you a pint somewhere. So a little tidbit about Fordyce, Arkansas. Is the birthplace of what legendary sports icon?
Oh, would that be the Bear Bryant?
It is! Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Very well. Very, very. You are a historian. And also, if you look at this finger, see those stitches?
Mm-hmm.
I got those in Fordyce, so...
There's a story behind that, I'm sure.
Yeah, my dad used to belong to a hunting club, and they hunted it in Princeton, Arkansas, population 41 at the time, which was like 30 minutes away from Fordyce, and I was whittling with a hunting knife in the woods and sliced open my finger and got a police escort into Fordyce.
Oh, very nice. Mr. Lyon actually returned to Fordyce and served another term or two as mayor. Following the brewing experience, and one of my favorite interviews that I conducted for this project was with him over the telephone, and he was very open, very gracious, had a keen sense of humor, and one of my favorite anecdotes is in the book, a recollection he had of attending GABF during their existence, and as I wrote in the book, if they weren't the most popular brewery at the event, they certainly were the brewery that had the most fun. And I'll tease it and leave it at that. Pick up a copy of the book if you want to know more.
And I'm sure the GABF, what year was that? I'm sure the GABF was a shadow of its current status.
Yeah, I can't remember the year that GABF started, but it would have been around about 85 or so that they attended.
It seems like to me that I'm trying to remember all the stories that I've heard. It seems like to me that the homebrew conference that was attached to GABF was actually bigger than GABF itself.
Quite possibly. I mean, the brewery count pales in comparison to what we have today. So,
well, much as with history of brewing way back, you know, over time, legislation played a big role in not only shutting down brewing in Arkansas, but also encouraging brewing as well. And one of the milestones that happened in the state was the allowing of the establishment of brew pubs, right?
That's right. Up until 1992, brew pubs were not allowed. And that's very discouraging, because if you think about a barrier to entry, not being able to brew beer in a restaurant environment and serve it to your patrons on site is a huge barrier. You know, one of the first, actually the first brew pub in the state, Weidman's Old Fort Brew Pub in Fort Smith, who, matter of fact, operated in the former Joseph Noble Brewery there in Fort Smith, which was one of the state's earliest breweries, opening in 1848 and conducting business until Noble's death in 1881. the Weidman family was instrumental in getting the legislation changed. Mm-hmm. And once that law changed and allowed brewers in the state to operate in a microbrewery environment, things really took off. Mm-hmm. We had Weidman's, which opened in 92, there in Fort Smith. We had Vino's, which opened in Little Rock. In fact, Vino's is still open and quite successful. One of the state's pioneers, Henry Lee, who's also been very involved in changing our state's laws. And then up here in Fayetteville in 1994, Ozark Brewing Company opened on Dixon Street. And I know you probably spent a few afternoons at Ozark enjoying beers. The brew pub down on Dixon Street was quite a thing for us in Fayetteville when it opened.
Yeah, back in, up until that point, the most exotic beers that we had access to were things like Killian's Red, mm-hmm. which is not it was not a bad beer. I don't know if it's still, do they still make it? Does Coors still make Killian's Red? I don't know, but
it's probably on the opposite end of the beer cooler that I spend most of my time. But who knows?
Nose firmly in the air. I'm teasing. And a thing called Red Dog. Do you remember Red Dog? That was a, you know, it wasn't a craft beer at all, but I can't remember who made it. But it was a bad time. Zima was around, you know,
which has recently made a comeback, actually.
Yeah. What goes around comes around. It's the nostalgic brew of this generation, of the younger generation. But yeah, when the thing that a brew pub does, especially in an area where there isn't good beer, is it exposes people to something different. They come in, they have some fish and chips, or they have a burger or whatever, and then they have you know, the local wheat beer or whatever is the closest thing to what they're used to drinking, and they say, hey, that's pretty good. And then they try other things. And so I think that was, along with the homebrewers in the area, that was the foothold of good beer in this part of the state, and it kind of opened people's eyes to the possibility that beer can be tasty. It is a food, and it is to be enjoyed rather than just swilled. And, you know, so the having brew pubs in communities was very instrumental, I think, in you know, sort of widening our scope.
It really helped us return to the old way of thinking, which is beer is a local thing. It's not a mass-produced industrial thing made in far-off lands like Milwaukee or St. Louis or wherever. It's a neighborhood business, and I think until Prohibition, the number of breweries in the country, now don't quote me on this, I've seen the statistics, but I don't remember them exactly, but thousands of breweries across the country. And I think that we have just recently moved beyond the all-time high in terms of number of breweries, and we've kind of returned to beer as a local foodstuff. And I think that's one of the things that people enjoy about craft beer, is that it's made by people they know. They get it fresh, and to your point, allowing brew pubs in the state of Arkansas helped people change their attitude around beer.
And so once they got their foothold, I mean, serving your own beer in your own restaurant is one thing. The next step is distribution, and that's why you said those that are connected with Vino's in Little Rock really did some lobbying with the legislature. Was the next step changing the way beer was distributed in the state?
The three-tier distribution model of getting beer to the public is something that has really haunted the industry. It too has been a barrier for entry. Most of the distribution houses across the country are dominated by the big brewers, and so you'll have a Miller that's in control of a particular distributor, Anheuser-Busch who's in control of another, and of course they will place great priority on their own products. In fact, Arkansas Brewing Company, Mr. Lyon told me stories about how his product was sabotaged by the distributors. Wow. Once it got into the retail establishments. And so changing some of the laws around the three-tier model was really critical to growing breweries and the industry in our state. And the Arkansas Native Brewery Act, which came about in 2003, was a big part of that. It allowed for some limited self-distribution. It cut out the middleman, if you will, and it allowed brewers to take their beer to the market themselves and ensure that beer was arriving at the retailer fresh and also prominently displayed and promoted by the retailer. So it was probably more than anything in the state of Arkansas, the Arkansas Native Brewery Act really was the catalyst for an explosion of growth.
I remember conversations with Andy Sparks, and he was friends with people who worked for distributors, and he would ask them, you know, hey, can we get X beer from Colorado in here, or what Y beer, whatever. And it turned out that, you know, I believe, and I'm saying don't quote me on this, but here I am talking, I think that the way the distributor system is is set up in the state of Arkansas, if you represent a brand, you have a monopoly on that, on representing that brand in the state. And so distributors would sign agreements with breweries and then not bring their beer in.
Exactly. They would sign an agreement and let the product sit in the warehouse and essentially keep it from going to market. And that was their way of snuffing out any local competition and ensuring dominance of their patriarch brands.
Right, right. You would think that they'd want to sell all the beer they could, but Big Brother looking over their shoulder, maybe?
That's right.
So now, let's jump into the present. Now it has to be interesting right now to write a history book on Arkansas brewing when it's a snapshot in time, because and you have kind of an afterword, you know, looking into the future, where you talk about, you know, some breweries that have plans on opening up, because that's just the way it's got to be. At some point you got to pick a stopping point and saying, this is where it's going to stop. We're going to, you know, put this to bed. We're going to put it to press. Things are growing so fast in the state, not only, you know, the existing breweries growing in production and finding new locations, and you know, but we also have new breweries coming on all the time. Do you have an idea of how many breweries we actually have right now in the state?
Well, at the end of 2016, there were 28, and we've had at least a couple open this year. We had JJ's Brewing and Beer Garden, and I always mix up their names, so it could be Beer Garden and Brewing Company, but JJ's here in Fayetteville opened up this year, as well as Fort Smith Brewing Company. They actually made the cut for the book, but again, the challenge of print publication on a topic like this is that the book it was outdated the moment that it hit the street. And so even since its release here on September 11th, I've learned of other breweries open up. Raps Baron Brewing Company, for example, in Mountain Home, Arkansas, just opened last weekend. And so there are no doubt others that we're not aware of. So we're into the 30s now. It's safe to say we're into the 30s now, and that's quite amazing, because back in 2011, there were only six.
And there's another one connected to Penguin Ed's B&B Barbecue, I think.
That's right.
It's like a very, really small one.
That's right. Actually, I wrote a story about Crisis Brewing Company a couple weeks ago for the Fayetteville Flyer. And they'll open up just across the road from the B&B Penguin Ed's Barbecue joint there, just off Archibald Yell in downtown Fayetteville.
And again, the scope of Arkansas brewing is kind of universal in that it represents everything from, you know, like these little bitty breweries, you know, that are making, you know, certainly less than 3 barrels at a time. And then now we've got, you know, production breweries that make 25 barrels at a time. And, you know, all the different philosophies of each of those establishments. It's such a diverse brewing culture.
It really is, and it runs the whole gamut from a large-scale brewery such as Lost 40, whose New England IPA we're enjoying right now. They've got a massive facility in downtown Little Rock, and as I said, are expecting to put out around 15,000 barrels this year. We've got breweries that focus on taproom sales, such as Fossil Cove, who we'll sample here in a moment. And really, they are about creating a destination and a place to gather as a community. And then we've also got true nano breweries, those that are brewing on a half barrel or one barrel scale. Crisis Brewing, which we just mentioned, is an example of that. Blue Canoe in Little Rock, Arkansas, is another example. And then we've got a unique model employed by Core Brewing and Distilling in Springdale, whereby they do have a production facility, but they also have satellite tap rooms all across the state. Springdale, Fayetteville, Rogers, Bentonville, Hot Springs, North Little Rock, just to name a few, and they feature exclusively their own beers. Just another way to get their beer to the public in an environment that they can control.
Now, this is a very interesting, at least to me, from a historical perspective. And maybe, are you ready for to crack open the Blizzle? I'm gonna pour my own rinse water here, and get you too. There we go. I'm working one-handed here, and I'm left-handed, so I'm at a disadvantage here, Brian. But back, if you read Maureen Ogle's, American. She's gonna hurt me. Look, insert the name of. I'll say it later. Ambitious Brews. Thank you. You've got to read that book if you're interested in beer history. One of the things that got brewers in trouble was opening saloons and having them exclusive to the brewers. So you would have a street, and you'd have a ton of saloons down this one street because each brewery had to open their own. They only sold their own beer. So that was in one step that kind of led us down the road to prohibition. In that, you had these districts where it was all kinds of things going on down there. Not saying that Core is that. Is that, but it's interesting that that the laws have opened back up to enable Core to open, and they're not, I doubt you'd call them saloons, but they have these tasting rooms that are exclusively their products, right?
Correct, yes, and I'm sure there are all kinds of assurances that they've given the state in terms of selling their beer to the tap rooms through some type of transaction. But I do think it is a brilliant model. Jesse Core is a very fine businessman. And, he told me during an interview a couple years ago that he fell in love with the English pub scene. And a nice, comfortable, relaxed environment, kind of a segue between work and home at the end of the workday. And he wanted to create that in local communities. And a lot of his tap rooms are in areas that are close to neighborhoods and residential areas, and they're wonderful. They're great places to hang out, play some board games, have a conversation with a friend, and from a branding standpoint, get your name into that local market in ways that perhaps you couldn't have otherwise.
You bet. I mean, if you create a destination place where people want to go to, and then they develop a relationship with your product, then it's got to carry over to the outside retail environment. And Jesse is also a fan and supporter of the local homebrewing community, so we've got to give him a shout out as we do frequently on the show. But now we're going to talk about Fossil Cove here, and we have the Blizzle. Now, what do we got here?
Well, cheers, James. The Blizzle is a black IPA, one of Fossil Cove Brewing Company's seasonals. A wonderful name. I love the name. They have the Blizzle, the black IPA, and the Whizzle, the white IPA, and I'm not sure if Snoop Dogg was an inspiration for these names, but they certainly work. And the great thing about Fossil Cove is that they tend to innovate. Ben Mills, the proprietor there, the head brewer, he loves to play around with ingredients. In fact, James, I believe he was the first to brew a commercial sour based on one of your recipes a few years ago.
Well, I don't know if it was the first, but it was the first that he did, certainly. And that was a kettle. It was actually a sour mash. It wasn't even a kettle sour; it was a sour mash, and it was tricky, but it worked out. It turned out to be a good beer. They were a little nervous. I remember Andy Coates from Ozark Brewing Company, who we didn't mention in this interview at all, although he's obviously a major player. He came in to check on the progress of the sour mash, and they wound up boiling for a little longer than they anticipated, because there was a little bit of a DMS in there that developed. But yeah, that was a fun project. And we did a video. If you look on our video feed, you can see a video about the process.
I write in the book that the release party for that beer was a telling sign for how popular local beer was becoming in Arkansas. It was It was very well attended. It was highly festive. And our good friend Andy Sparks brought some great syrups to accompany that beer. Mm-hmm. And it was just a wonderful day. And to think back now on how much the industry has grown since that beer's release, it's quite amazing.
And the Blizzle comes out of a can as well. And it is tasty. It's got a roasty character to it, but it goes well with the hop character as well. And it turns out to be a very drinkable beer, sessionable, if you will. So what about the, can you look into your crystal ball and see what projections do you have for the future? I mean, you know, is there a beer bubble in Arkansas, or is there room to grow, or, you know, you're not an economist, but, but you have plenty of exposure to the market. What do you see?
My sociology degree will limit my response, around economics. However, I do see more growth in our future. Quite frankly, I think that there are more attitudes to change. We mentioned earlier that despite the growth, macro beer is still the dominant beer in the state of Arkansas. And so there are more people to sway in our direction. I do think, however, that the novelty will wear off soon, and it will become more about quality, as it should be. And so as new brewers enter the market, they should be thinking about quality control. They should be thinking about setting up labs at their breweries, really controlling the environment in which the beer is made. Because as we move forward, drinkers will become more discerning. There are more options available to them. So if there is a beer that is just not quite right, they'll move down the road, because most assuredly there is another brewer down the road making good beer. I think the local brewery model will continue to dominate, in the sense that we want to know who our brewer is. One of my favorite things about covering the scene, quite frankly, is the people. I love beer, of course. I've listened to your show for many years now, because I've homebrewed for many years. And James, you've been quite an inspiration to me. Beer is a huge thing for me, but the people are awesome as well, and their stories. I told somebody the other day, beer people are so open and sharing and have such a positive outlook on life. They're a lot of fun to hang around, and that's so much of the appeal. I think that nano breweries can pop up on virtually every corner and find success. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you who said this, but I believe it to be true. You could make a really nice living and support your family owning and operating a brewery that puts out 5,000 barrels or less per year. There's lots of room for that, mm-hmm. definitely in the state of Arkansas. And although Northwest Arkansas and Central Arkansas have been the hubs for brewing growth, there is a lot of geography to cover in the state. And so, you know, one of the chapters in the book I affectionately call the hinterland. Yeah. And you know, there are some wonderful breweries out there in some pretty small and rural areas. Gravity Brew Works, for example, is out towards the Buffalo River in Big Flat, Arkansas, and it's run. Have you heard of Big Flat, Arkansas, James?
No,
probably not. It's just a tiny speck on the map. But Bill Riffle. Bill is a pioneer in brewing in the state. He brewed at Vino's for a period of time, really, as it took off and found great success. He operates Gravity Brew Works with his wife, Tony Gwynn. Bubba's Brewing Company, mm-hmm. Bubba Brews Brewing Company, I should say, in Bonnerdale.
Near Hot Springs.
That's right, just outside of Hot Springs. And, in fact, they're opening a tap room in downtown Hot Springs, and also another restaurant and, well, really a brew pub there on the lake, on Lake Hamilton. Superior Bath House, which is also in Hot Springs. I believe you've interviewed Rose Schweikart.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's a brewery that's actually located inside a national park. I don't know if there's another one.
It's unbelievable, the history, when you walk into Superior to be a part of downtown Hot Springs, where the ghosts of gangsters and baseball players and movie stars kind of walk along the sidewalks with you. Preston Rose, which is located in Paris, Arkansas, just a small rural community, and many, many other examples where, even in places you would never suspect, People will enjoy craft beer once they get a taste of it and they meet the people that brew it.
Amen, brother. Well, Brian, this has been fun. The book is a lot of fun to read. You're an excellent writer. Check out Brian's stuff on FaithfulFlyer.com and pick up the book. If you're a history fan, if you're history brewing in the United States or the world, pick up Arkansas Beer, and it's a good read. Appreciate your coming out. Appreciate your. Now maybe we'll sip some of my questionable homebrew off mic.
James, thanks for having me. This is awesome. I ran around the state of Arkansas driving a rental car for work, listening to Basic Brewing Radio just as I started brewing, and to sit here with you on your porch, it's been a true honor. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Brian. Arkansas Beer and Intoxicating History is out now. It's a fun read. Brian's a sharp guy. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcast. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all at our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Woodstream 32-inch Live Animal Cage Trap. Somebody's got some varmints. And Sorbus Fire Pit 22-inch Portable Outdoor Fireplace. Backyard patio fire bowl, foldable legs, includes safety mesh cover, poker stick, and carry bag. Great for camping, outdoor heating, bonfire, picnic, etc. It's getting cool. It's going to get cool soon. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site. The next time you feel like Amazon shopping, we greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voice, and we'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.